let him lend an alcoholic. Welcome to the Thursday Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Thursday evening it says. Meeting of Sober Sailors Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I've stated my name. Are there any other alcoholics in the room? Yeah. Give me top a hand. Okay. It is a custom in Southern California and at sea to read a portion of our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have asked Diane W. My name is Diane Walker, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Diane.
I'm from Irvine, California, and my sobriety date is 9/27/77.
Today.
Yes. I also don't see very well, so I'll do the best I can. Portion of Chapter 5 from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives were unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these steps, these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. Thank you. Thank you. I forgot to state my sobriety date. It's May 16th, 75. Okay, what does it say next here? This meeting, as well as all meetings of Sober Sailors Cruise, is being taped. If you wish to purchase these tapes, they will be made available to you in 2 weeks. That's what it says. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, a short coffee break, and a main speaker. Our first 10-minute speaker is Marion C. I was just thinking, when I first got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, someone said, you have to hear Chuck C. He's real spiritual. And I knew about as much about being spiritual as I did being sober, which was nothing. But all I remember was this cute little chuckle. Let's hear Chuck.
Thank you. My name is Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is sometime after the middle of January 1946. I had to wait for that. Some of you aren't even that old. And fortunately for me, I have not had a drink or a sedating or tranquilizing pill since I came to you. Another thing that's in my favor, I've never had a conscious desire for a drink since I came. Now, I've been called a damn liar in open meeting on many occasions for saying that, but it's true in my case. And I'm very happy that it is, because I'm quite sure that had I had a desire to drink, I would have gotten drunk. Because I always did. And so I'm very grateful that I've never had a conscious desire for a drink in some 33 years and 7 months. Now, many of you can't imagine a time when there wasn't any Alcoholics Anonymous. But I ran out of time before Alcoholics Anonymous was born. I had run out of good drinking time before Alcoholics Anonymous was born. Alcoholics Anonymous is only 44 years old. 10th day of last June. And I was already out of time, good drinking time, when AA was born. So I didn't know it. And I tried for another dozen years to prove that I wasn't out of good drinking time. And I eventually, after using every resource I had, I proved that I had been out of good drinking time for at least a dozen years. So I'm very happy to have lived long enough to get here. There's one thing that I'm not that grateful for. I missed my dinner tonight just to hear Clance talk. I wish the hell I'd eaten dinner. That man said it all. You know, it's sort of a joke with me, because I knew Clancy before he got seriously interested in this program of ours. And, of course, I knew that it was impossible for him to ever get sober and stay sober. Because he didn't have it. Really, he didn't. He was dirty, both in mind and body. He had no front teeth. And he was an egotistical, arrogant son of a bitch. That's what he was. So he didn't have a chance. And I knew it. And he's been an amazing chap to watch over the years. Very amazing indeed. He asked me, I presume, he mentioned it, the date, 1969. I suspect that's when he asked me to be his sponsor. And the way he did it, he gave me 2 tickets to a World Series baseball game where Sandy Koufax was pitching. Now, he came clear down my plant and gave me those 2 tickets, that game. And then he asked me to be his sponsor. And hell, I couldn't turn him down then. So I told him that I never had any babies. I wouldn't call anybody my baby because I didn't want to take credit for somebody's sobriety when I couldn't even get sober myself. But I told him I'd give him everything I had. But I wouldn't think of him as my baby. I've never had a baby in 33 years and 7 months for that reason I just told you. And it's been a rather unusual sponsorship. He calls me at least once a week to wish me well. Hope I have a good day. But he never gives me a problem. And a few years ago, he had a problem. And it scared the hell out of him. He thought he had cancer. And he tried to get a hold of his sponsor. And where was I? I was in England. The only time he ever needed me. I was clear out of the country. So, he's gotten along pretty well without me. Believe me. What a talk he just gave us. I think that the best I can do tonight would be not to talk about the problem at all, because he pretty well nailed the problem down, as almost nobody else can nail it down. He does. So I think I'm going to talk about the answer. And that's really all I'm going to talk about, because I am totally and completely insane. I believe that if you and I could see what we belong to, it would blind us. This thing called Alcoholics Anonymous is bigger than all outdoors. It's a fantastic, fantastic thing. And has been said from the podium several times since this thing started. Don't miss it. You know, so many of us, I think, get close to missing the boat entirely. Because in such a great percentage of cases, we come up with the idea that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a self-improvement society. Self-improvement. I hear much from the podiums and incidentally from the grapevine, another information that comes out of our general offices in New York, that I am totally in disagreement with. For instance, I hear much talk about you have to learn how to love yourself before you can love anybody else. I hear an awful lot about that. And read a good deal about it, too. And I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. I wouldn't have the slightest idea how to go about learning to love me. I wouldn't have the slightest idea. In the first place, I'm not interested. Some of you have noticed in the past that my preference is for ladies. I love women. And I'd have not the slightest idea of how to go about learning to love me. So I've never had that problem. I hear from the podium here that there are many answers to prayer. There is yes, no, maybe, later. Many answers to prayer. I don't believe it. I think that every prayer that was ever uttered is answered. And it's answered at the same time as the prayer. There's a verse in another book that says, whatsoever you desire when you pray, believe that you have it. And you shall receive it. So I think that our prayer, number one, must be in accord with the nature of God. And if it is, we have to accept the answer. They call it in spiritual mind healing in certain other societies, a mental equivalent. In other words, we have to be able to accept the thing we ask for. And if we can accept it, it is granted. I do not believe in a God of special dispensations and special grants. I think that we, his kids, when we fulfill the conditions, things happen to us. And until we do, they don't. And I don't think it's a special grant or a special dispensation. I hear that it's necessary that we rebuild our self-worth, our feelings of self-worth. I don't believe it. It never occurred to me that I should try to rebuild my self-worth. And it hasn't been a part of my program at all. I also hear a great deal about rebuilding our self-confidence. You know, you got to rebuild your self-confidence. If there's anything on the face of the earth that I don't want any part of ever again, it's self-confidence. I had enough self-confidence when I was born for everybody west of the Mississippi River. My self-confidence kept me working on my problem for 10 years after I'd lost. 10 years after I'd lost, I was still working on my problem. And I was saying to me, I'm going to beat this thing if it's the last thing I ever do. And it came that close to being the last thing I ever did. I wrote it right down and through the gates of insanity and death. And I suspect that this is the only difference between me and anybody else in the room. Because I got to the program already surrendered. And the only thing that I can take credit for is that I drank the whiskey. And I'll just tell you quickly that my last drunk to date started the Friday before Christmas, 1945. And it ended up sometime after the middle of January, 1946. That's the reason I didn't give you a sobriety date, because I don't know it. I know it was after the middle of January, 1946. And sometime between the Friday before Christmas, 45, and the middle of January, 1946, everything between me and me burned out. There was nothing left. There wasn't an excuse left. Everything was gone, including the I want, I don't want, I don't like, I. It burned up in those last 4 or 5 weeks of total blackout. I surrendered. And I got to the program surrendered.
And whom I have brought a long way.
Took me a hell of a lot
longer to teach her that stuff that you heard
than it did for her to tell it, I'll tell you that. If she was telling you this story, she would tell you during that 5 weeks, I destroyed 7 quarts of whiskey every 3 days. Now, mind you, I don't say that. I said she said that. I can't argue with her because I wasn't there. So I don't know. But I will tell you quickly that I do not believe that 7 quarts of whiskey is too much for 3 days. If you only do it 3 days. But if you do it 5 weeks, it's either too much or just enough. And in my case, it was just enough. Because I didn't go ahead and finish dying. I died to self. I died to self, and they call that surrender. And I got to the program surrendered. Now the third day of August of this year, I celebrated my 77th year of life. I finished my 77th year. The third day of August of this year. And my 77th year of life was the greatest year I've ever lived in my entire lifetime, including my childhood. And I don't think that's bad, really, I don't. The best year I've ever lived was my 77th year of life. And I suspect that if I live through the 78th, it'll be the best. Because that's the way it's been with me. Now, when I got well enough to look for Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know where to look. Because my keen alcoholic mind told me you wouldn't be in the phone book. You were anonymous, weren't you? They don't anonymous in the phone book. So knowing you weren't there, I never looked. Which is the story of my life. I knew so damn much that wasn't true, I couldn't learn anything that was. So I had to call people and ask them if they knew anybody that knew anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I finally got a name and a telephone number of a gentleman in Beverly Hills who was a motion picture actor. And I called the old boy. And we talked a little while, and he says, have you had a drink today? And I said, no. But he says, don't take one. I'm working nights right now, and I can't take you to a meeting. But maybe tomorrow. I won't work tomorrow night. And I can take you to a meeting. Call me tomorrow. So I called him tomorrow, and we talked a little while. He says, have you had a drink today? And I said, no. But he says, don't take one. I'm still working. Call me tomorrow. So the third day, I called him. And we started talking again, and I recognized that This wasn't the day either. So I says, I know, you're still working. And he says, yeah. I said, you don't need to take me to meeting. Where's your meeting I can go to? And he told me, and it wasn't too far from where I live. And I determined to go. And I was all right until shortly before it was time for me to leave. And I got concerned. I got very worried, as a matter of fact. Because I'd lived in Beverly Hills for a long time. And it just might be that I shouldn't be seen with people like you. It might be bad for my reputation. Now, you don't have any idea how funny that one is. For 10 years, I'd spent more time in the Beverly Hills jail than the jailer. And here I'm concerned about being seen with people like you. But I had decided to go, and I disguised myself a bit and went to the meeting. And I got there about, maybe 10 minutes before it was supposed to take up. And there might have been 35, there might have been 40 people in the middle of the room. It was in Veterans of Foreign Wars Hall in Beverly. And I stood in the door looking at 35 or 40 people. And again, my keen alcoholic mind tricked me a bit. Because you didn't look like me, and you weren't dressed like me, and you most certainly were not talking like me. Because every one of you were talking at once, nobody listening, and it was all happy talk. So I knew that they'd given me the wrong information. These were the veterans and their wives, and they were there for a party. And I was going to have to leave and come back the night the drunks were there. And I turned to leave. And I was near dead as I'll ever be. At long last, I'd come, and it was the wrong night. Now, here is the reason I'm here tonight. Somebody in the middle of that room had been watching me. And when I turned to leave, he came running over the door. And he called after me, and he says, Mister, were you looking for somebody? And I said, no, sir. Well, he says, what were you looking for then? And thinking he was a veteran, I said, well, if it would interest you, sir, I was looking for sobriety. And everything about that man changed just like that. He lit up just like you'd pressed an electric light switch. He just lit up. And it was obvious to me that he was glad I was there. Now, some of you know what I'm talking about. Everybody that knew me was glad I was there. But for a very different reason than this guy. They were glad I was there because I was there, I couldn't be there. But not this guy. He was so glad I was there, he lit up. And I was hooked before he ever said another word. And when he did, this is what he said. Why, take off your hat and coat, you're in the right place. And he took me in and rocked me to sleep. Now this is, in my way of thinking, this is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am convinced that there's not enough intellectual knowledge on the face of the earth to get one alcoholic sober and keep him sober. Not enough intellectual knowledge on the face of the earth to get one alcoholic sober and keep him sober. We are allowed to get sober by the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. We maintain sobriety by the practice of principles. I don't think that any alcoholic ever gets sober by practicing principles or profundity. We have the most profound membership that you'll find in any organization on the face of the earth. There ain't any alcoholic in this room that hasn't known exactly what was wrong with everybody they ever looked at. We are great in the philosophical line. We know exactly what's wrong with everybody we ever look at. And the hell of it is, we don't mind telling them. What's wrong with him? And that's not a good way to win friends and influence people. So we're a great bunch of philosophers. If profundity had done it, we'd have had it made a long, long time ago. But it won't do it. Something has to happen in here if we be alcoholic. Lest we drink again. For instance, why am I not drunk tonight? There is only one reason. There's not two. There's just one. And the reason is very, very simple. I have the thing I was looking for in the bottle. I've got it. I've got the thing I was looking for in the bottle. Now, what's the thing? I'm not fighting me or you or life or God or the devil. I am at peace with me and with you and with my very own God. There's nothing in a bottle, needle, pill, pot, or acid that can do anything for me but tear me down. So it is not necessary that I drink today. And that's the only reason I'm not drunk. If I felt right here like I felt 35 years ago, I'd be just as drunk as I was 35 years ago. There's any question in the world in my mind about that. So it's very necessary that I so perform that I don't feel that way right here. And in my opinion, we have the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for obtaining and maintaining sobriety. The finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for obtaining and maintaining sobriety, which is a wonderful thing so far as we're concerned. But I also believe that a really more wonderful thing than that is that the same formula that we have for sobriety is the formula for the good life and for self-discovery. For self-discovery. Same formula. 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It's a living answer to a living problem, providing you and I honestly apply these steps to ourselves for sobriety only. For sobriety only. I think that our biggest roadblock is that we have conditions on sobriety. Conditions. We have related disorders that need our attention. And we get all jumbled up in the reasons we're doing the things that we're doing. I had about as nice a group of related disorders as possible to build up in 43 years of life. I had no home, no job, no health, no sanity, and no money. Now, I don't think that you can build up a much better group of related disorders than that. My good wife, after 20 years, was divorcing me. And I might say quickly, without cause. I'd given her 20 of the best years of my life. And here she has divorced me. And I think that's a pretty good related disorder. Our kids wouldn't even come home when I was around. And I don't think that's a very nice way to treat your dear old father. So I believe that to be a pretty good related disorder. My boss man had sent word to the house that if I ever stepped foot in the plant again, he was going to throw me through the window. And the window that he had picked out for that purpose, don't open. Plate glass. So, I had no money, no job, no health, no sanity, no money. And I never spent 5 seconds on any one of those related disorders. Not 5 seconds. And all of the related disorders disappeared, along with my obsession for whiskey. And I didn't even know when they left. I discovered that they were gone. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. I am convinced that Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing in the world but uncovering, discovering, and discarding. Uncovering, discovering, and discarding. I do not believe that anyone here in this room tonight needs anything added to your life. Not anybody in the room needs anything added to your life. I think it's uncovered, discover, and discard. There's another line in a little book that I talked about a while ago that says, if God be for you, who can be against you? And having lived with people like you for 33 years, I am absolutely and totally convinced that the first two words of the Lord's Prayer mean exactly what they say. My Father God, I His kid. And if that be true, and I totally accept it as the truth, because of my own experience, not because it's in a book, then we can allow our imaginations to go absolutely wild, and we can't even get close to the truth of being itself. My Father God, I His kid. So I don't think we need anything added to our lives. I think it's only a matter of finding what's already there. And we have to find it where it is. Now, quickly, I had tried for 30 years to find God before I got here. I'd had the experience of attempting to get saved at 13 years old. And I didn't make it. And I spent the next 30 years trying to find out why. And in that time, I'd gone through all the great religions and philosophies of the world. And I became very learned in religion and philosophy. I was known as a drunken deacon for the last 10 years that I drank. Because I knew all the answers. But I couldn't find out how come I hadn't been able to get saved when I tried so hard, along with the preacher that was trying to help me. And I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous having been through the gates of insanity and death, not even thinking about looking for God. That was totally out of the question. I wasn't looking for sobriety for me because I wasn't going to live, and there was no sense in getting sober and staying sober if you're going to die. So I didn't come looking for sobriety for me. I didn't come looking for health, because nobody in my condition could live. And I knew it, so I never went to a doctor. And before I forget it, the first 3.5 years in this program, I fell on my face. I'd be walking down the street with you, and this thing would hit me. I'd have to grab you around the neck, grab a telephone pole, lean up against a building, or go flat on my face. And I never even went to a doctor, because it wasn't necessary. Hell, I wasn't going to live anyhow. So, I just fell on my face till I could walk. Now, it's been a long time since I fell on my face. But I didn't go to a doctor. I might have gone to a doctor and been over that in a few months. You know. But there was no sense in doing it if you're going to die anyhow, was it? So I never checked it out. I had no thought of getting my wife back or the love of my kids back. I came to you people for one reason and one reason only. And that was find out how to not drink today. So I could use today rubbing out as much of the record as I could before I died. That's the only reason I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. To find out how not to drink today, so I could use the time rubbing out a record. And you told me the things I needed to know. The very first night I got here. The little simple things like today's the day we don't drink. It's the first drink that's killing you. One drink's too many and a thousand aren't enough. You told me to stay close to us. Because there's no more wisdom in this room about your problem and its answer than any other room on the face of the earth, except another room just like this, where members of Alcoholics Anonymous are meeting. So get into as many meetings as you can. And then you explain the disease of alcoholism, the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And you told me there was nothing we could do about the allergy of the body but accept it. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So we accepted the fact that we had it and never would get rid of it. And then turned to the other half of the disease. The obsessions of the mind. And that our program was for that purpose. To rid us of the obsession to drink. All those things you told me the first night. And I bought them. And I still got them. It's a strange thing to me to look back over 33 years without a drink or a pill and see that I drank for 25 years and up until my last drunk, it was never my fault that I drank. Now, isn't that something? It would appear to me now that one of those drunks would have been my fault by accident. You know? But up until my last drunk, it was never my fault that I drank. It was your fault. If you stupid people that had lived like I knew you should, and like I told you how, I wouldn't have had to get drunk at you. But you wouldn't do it. So, up until my last drunk, it wasn't my fault, it was my wife's fault, it was the boss's fault, it was my wife's mother's fault. There's conditions and circumstances, but never me. And on my last trip out, I came to see that if there be fault, it's mine. And I've never had to drink anymore. If there be fault, it is mine. So, I kept coming back to meetings. Every night of the week for 6 months. For two reasons. Number one, it was comfortable with you. I knew you were drunks because you were marked up like me. But you weren't drunk because I heard what you said and saw your eyes. And there's nothing any more beautiful to me in the world than the eyes of a recovering alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're beautiful. So I'm back here every night of the week. For 6 months. And I made my first discovery. That I had been sober. Without a drink or a pill for 6 months. Now you have to be sober. for 6 months before you can discover you've been sober 6 months. There's no way beating this rap. And I discovered I'd been sober 6 months, not a drink or pill. And I got so delighted about that, so grateful for it, I immediately launched on trying to give this thing away to other alcoholics. And another 6 months went by. And I made another discovery that I had a family. And they were living like kittens. And if you don't think that's a terrific discovery, I'll put up with you. They were gone and should be gone, and I wasn't entitled to have them back, and I knew it. And here, sometime between the first 6 months and the first year, I discovered that I had a family, and they were living like kittens. I'll just give you one little highlight on that. In those early days, I had a girlfriend that went with me to meetings. She was probably 25 years my senior, and she was very, very wealthy. She lived up above the hotel in Beverly Hills. We lived in Beverly Hills. And we lived between Wilshire and Olympic, down on the flatlands where the poor people lived. And I never did know how I got a hold of Louise. But all I had to do was call Louise and say, let's go to a meeting. She'd say, come and get me. And we went to many, many meetings together. And sometime between the first 6 months and the first year, she called my house thinking to get me. And she got Miss C on the line. And Louise had a whiskey voice. She was one of us. She said, who the hell are you? And Miss C says, well, I'm Chuck's wife. And Louis says, didn't know he had a wife. And Mrs. Z says, well, he doesn't either. And I didn't. But after a year, I discovered that I had a wife and kids, and they were living like kittens. And that's no mean discovery. And another 6 months went by, and I discovered that I was still down to the office trying to clean up my desk. And business was good. It was just plumb good. And that was quite a nice discovery. And another year went by. And I discovered that my state of being was better than anything I'd ever known. In my lifetime. This was terrific. And that's a good discovery. And now 6 years have gone by. And I discovered I was never alone anymore. This is the great discovery. When we make this discovery, the search is over and life begins. I discovered I was never alone anymore. I had a God of my very own. And wherever I am, He is. And it all came out of doing these simple things one day at a time. To the best of my ability, so that I might not have to drink today in order to rub out as much of the record as possible before I die. Well, when I discovered that I was never alone anymore, I said to myself, what are you going to do to show your gratitude? My watch is wrong. If I'm not badly mistaken, I haven't got but 10 minutes left, and I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. I'm going to try, but I won't make it.
Take an hour.
Anyway, thank you. You heard him. It's not my fault. What am I going to do to show my gratitude? And the funny part of it was, the first thing I decided to do was to make him a plaque. This is for God, mind you. I was going to make him a plaque because we were in the woodworking business. Had some of the finest mechanics in the world. And I could build him a whale of a plaque. And I had it half designed in my mind. Finally, it occurred to me, who are you going to give it to? And that presented a problem. So I had to discard that one. So the next thing, I decided to be a Trappist monk. Now, I'm not even a Catholic. But I knew a great deal about Trappist monks, and I decided I'd just be a Trappist monk. And I played with that a little bit, and then it occurred to me, look, son, if you have any value to life, it's to the drunk who still suffers. And you're not going to run into many drunks in a Trappist monk colony. So I had to give that up. And in pondering what I was going to do, I remembered a little thing that happened in the latter days of the carpenter's experience here on earth. When he called old Pete in. I call him old Pete, you call him St. Peter. But he and I were boys together, that's the reason I call him. He calls old Pete in, and he says to him, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, yea, Lord. And he says, tend my sheep. Turned right around and asked him again, Peter, do you love me? He says, yea, Lord, tend my sheep. And then he turned right around and asked him again, Peter, do you love me? Yea, Lord, tend my sheep. I said, he must have meant tend my sheep. He said it three times. So up until my sixth year, I called this thing rubbing out a record. Since my sixth year, I've called it helping God's kids do things they need to have done because I want to. And that's all I've done. You see, our 12th step gives us a program of action for many lifetimes to come. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, the first 11. We tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. In all of our affairs. Now that means everything we do, home, play, church, AA, business, everything in life. And if we apply the same principles to everything in life, everything becomes one. And it's merely living, being. And there's no difference between home, play, business, AA, church, or anything else. Because we're practicing the same principles in everything that we do. And that's all I've done for the last 33 years and 7 months. Now what's happened? Quickly, I had beaten my brains out for 30 years trying to get what I thought I was born without. And I ended up without 2 coppers to rub together. And I started practicing these principles in all of my affairs and in the same business. In the same business, I got rich. And I wasn't trying to, I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just helping God's kids do things that he needed to have done because I wanted to. And so that's one of the reasons that I believe as I do. I quit trying to go someplace. I'd been trying for 30 years to go someplace because I was conditioned to believe we had to go someplace. We had to be this, have that, and be no one as before we could live. And I quit trying to go someplace. And since that time, I've been all over the world. So, that's one of the reasons that I believe as I believe. Everything that I ever dreamed of, as a kid, lying on my back down there in the bluegrass country, looking up in the heavens, everything that I ever dreamed about as a kid is mine in spades. And all I've done in these last 33 years is to practice these principles in all of my affairs one day at a time to the best of my ability. Now what's happened to me makes me believe this with everything in me. that the gift of God was made at the foundations of the earth. He gave us himself and the universe at the beginning of time. It's always been ours. And he has always known it because he gave it to us. He has never been confused. But you and I have to discover this for ourselves. And it's a matter of uncovering and discovering and discarding the things we were taught that are contrary to the living fact of our experience. I'm totally convinced that if one of us is God's child, all of us are. If one of us is not, none of us are. And I am, so you is. So quit worrying about it. And start acting like it. And you'll prove that it's true. Now to close up the works, and I'm not half done. Wouldn't be it tomorrow morning yet. Because I love this thing, and I love its people. It's my life, my love, and my dedication. When things were important to me personally, I couldn't have them. I beat my brains out to get them, and I couldn't have them. And when they became totally and completely unimportant to me personally, they became mine. For instance, the first person I talked with after I got well enough to talk was my good wife. As I told you, she was divorcing me. And I called her in and I said, "Honey, it's no longer of any consequence to me whether or not I live under this roof. It is of absolutely no importance to me at all. I'll never ask a thing of you as long as the two of us live, but one. If I can ever add anything to your life, let me give it to you." And we closed the book. And it's never been reopened. I called the boys in. And I said, "Boys, there's no father in the household any longer. You don't need to love me. You don't need to respect me. You don't need to obey me. I'll never ask a thing of you as long as we live, but one. If I ever have anything that'll add to your life, be it money, counsel, or blood, let me give it to you." And we closed the book, and that's never been reopened. And I went down to the office. And my boss came in to throw me through the window. I knew he was going to, and it was all right. Because he'd paid me for something I hadn't done. And I went down there, and he came in to throw me through the window. And I says, "Victor, leave me alone. I don't work for you anymore. I'm down here to clean up this desk. I'm here to do the things you paid me for last year that I didn't do. And as soon as I get even with you, I'll get the hell out of here on my own power. And you'll never owe me a penny as long as you live, but for God's sake, leave me alone. I've got to get even with you." And he stopped his tracks. And he says, "What the hell's happened to you, Charlie?" And I says, "Don't know." And I didn't. But he didn't throw me through the window. Now, if Mrs. C were telling you this story, she would tell you that the first time I talked to her, she knew something had happened. She didn't know what. But she knew something had happened. And so she sort of hesitated in getting a divorce. Five years later, I'd be talking to a man in business, and he'd stop me right in the middle of a sentence. And he'd say, "Charlie, what the hell's happened to you? I've been knowing you for 25 years and don't know you. What happened?" And I'd say, "Don't know." And I didn't. But looking back from 33 years out, the whole thing happened when I died to self in January 1946. When I was totally and completely surrendered by the bottle. It all happened right there. Because I am again totally convinced that the only roadblock between me and you and me and God is the human ego. I want it, don't want it, like it, don't like it, yeah. And when that thing is gone, there is no roadblock between me and you and me and God. And what do we discover? When we discover ourselves, we discover our relationship to each other and to the living God that made us and is us. And it includes a feeling of dignity, of value, of worth that is indescribably beautiful. Fantastic. I am my father's kid. And this is the answer. I am convinced that the only possibility for you and I and all the people that are using our program for other things, the only possibility for us to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously with ourselves, which is sobriety, is when we can and do establish and maintain a personally satisfactory, conscious partnership with the living God that made us in the entire business of living. Then we discover that St. Francis knew what he was talking about when he said it's better to love than to be loved. It's better to understand than to be understood. For it is in giving that we receive, in forgiving that we are forgiven, and in dying to self or surrender that we awaken to eternal life. And I believe that's what it's all about. I believe we're the most fortunate segment of all God's creation, because it becomes absolutely necessary for us to find a living answer lest we die. We can't survive without it. And we do these simple things for sobriety and sobriety only. And we come up with the total answer to life. The total answer. A partnership with God in all our affairs, one day at a time, for the rest of our days. Again, I highly recommend this. I love it. And I love you. You don't have to change anything about you for me to love you. If you're drunk, you don't even have to get sober for me to love you. If you're a thief, you don't have to quit thiefing for me to love you. If you're a liar, you don't have to quit lying for me to love you. Because, you see, I know who you are, whether you do or not. You're God's kids, even as I am. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Chuck and I both will fall together.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marion Shadman, not Marion C. And I am, beyond a doubt, one of the most gracious and thankful alcoholics, I think, in this old wide world today. You know, I was sitting there thinking when Clancy was talking, where is that light thing at, baby?
Right here.
Okay. I never give it. It takes me 10 minutes to get my name out. I'm kind of long-winded. But you know, I was lying in that dungeon, and I was thinking, my God, my birthday and my sobriety date is May the 1st, 1961. Now, before I get into this 10 minutes, I want to share with some of you. You mean you say I am getting kind of old, huh, baby? Tell me what I know. That's what I'm talking about. For some of you that are new to this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody later read there are no dues and fees. This is beyond the doubt one of the most expensive organizations on God's green earth. And I'm not talking about money, baby. You know what I mean. I'm talking about the thing that it takes away from you if you're not careful. The thing that I think that you were looking through the bottle for. Dignity, self-respect. There was one man in my bunk this afternoon and thinking, would I have ever thought that I would have been on a boat, a ship, or whatever you call this thing, going anywhere, not unless it was transferring me to Terminal Island or somewhere, you know what I mean? I don't know. Evidently, somebody knows where Terminal Island is. You know, it's crazy. It's weird. And I've been all down there, all over the United States, trying to do my little bit. And a fellowship that has given me so very much. You see, I'm like that skit that was put on last night. I didn't drink two martinis and triple through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, here I am and I'm living happy ever after. And if you be new here today, you've got one of those sponsors that talk about, oh, anybody that's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous have done more than drink too damn much. Believe me, they have. And that's the story of my life. I'm so grateful tonight that I don't know what to do. I've got so much going for me, sometimes I have to pinch myself. You see, I'm one of those people that came in here looking at you people and saying, not now, baby, I'm not quite that bad. And you know, sometimes when I go to meetings and I hear the people talk about, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. If you ain't ready, if you're 50, you're too damn young. You know what I mean? And if you're 20, you're too young. This program, I've done all the things that I want to do. Alcohol took me many places, ladies and gentlemen. It took me many places physically. It took me many places emotionally. But I believe the thing that drove me back to Alcoholics Anonymous was not the physical thing. I believe it was the emotional part of my being. The darn near drove me insane. And that's why I try to watch myself in this program, The 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to give you a drunkard log here because every one of you, the longer you stay sober, you'll get around to that one of these days. The longer you stay sober, you know how to get away from that. You know how to get drunk. But how the hell do you stay sober? That's the key. And I'm going to tell you how I got that one night. One night I've been out to Terminal Island. And I'm out there that night and I'm preaching, oh God, this. And one of those girls walked to the gate with me and she looked at me and she said, Marion, you know something? You people have been out here and you come out here and you talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, but would you tell me something? How in the name of God are you making it out there? And that hit me. And that's when I said to me and my God, dear God, let me tell the truth about how it is out there. Not how I want them to believe it is. Because sometimes it gets awful rough, like right now. Because this slip is reminding me of when you've been drunk and you went to lay down. I don't know if you've ever been through that. And that bed would reel and it would rock, you know what I mean? And that's the way I'm doing now. Whoopee. And that book I sleep in gets like that sometimes. And I remember that, ladies and gentlemen. This program, and this is what makes me stand before you tonight, not only say that I'm grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the longer I stay sober, the more I am to get into place that I thank my God for this program called Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a heavy deal you're in here tonight. A is heavy. It'll make you break you. And then it has broke me, so sometimes I want to take this very book here. And I want to take this book and beat my brains out with it. Say, but I got to do it. I guess I got to, but I don't want to do it. But I have to do it to survive. I've been all the places that some of you people have never heard of. I know what it means to drink when you don't want to drink. And you may not have been there, but I have been. I know what it means to pour out a bottle out and say, I'm not going to drink it. And you go and you buy a bottle. And you stand there with the hatred and you call your name, yourself all kinds of names. But you drink it anyway. And finally, it was May the 1st in 1961. And you see, ladies and gentlemen, I don't take my sobriety for granted. And neither do I take the credit for my sobriety now that I'm sober and not afraid to use the word God, because for a long time I was scared to use the word God. because I wanted to be a hippie like some of you people in here, you know, was doing that disco crap of the night, you know. Get with that shit. Now, I may be getting kind of senior citizen age, but I'm identified, I'm in the body. The body's all right, but it just don't move like it used to, you know. But see, I can look back on my past, and man who forgets his past is doomed to renew it. And that's what this book is talking about. We share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We share. We share. Sometimes now I think, oh God, why me? Why am I in the position of predicting that I'm in today? What am I doing wrong? I'm pure inside, in and out. And I'm still going to meetings sometimes, and well, tonight I'm going to meet that guy. I'm going to kiss him, you know. And you know what he's got to have? Else he's got Chuck already. You know. He's got to have 102 years, about 46 years of sobriety, and a program about how old, 45. He's got about 3 months to retire from his job. He's 6 feet tall and over. He's gray-haired, and we're going to live happy ever ever, fantasizing. And if you're in that stage, ain't a darn thing wrong with that, you know. Fantasize, but don't fantasize yourself into a drunk. Thank you very much for listening to me, and may God bless you.
Thank you. There's been one announcement. Betty Sunbright has lost her traveler's checks. She's eating right now, but she lost her traveler's checks, and her room is F-29. It's the hell out of me. Okay, our second 10-minute speaker is Frank Albertson.
Hi, I'm Frank Albertson, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the South Coast Speaker Group of Laguna Beach. And my sobriety date is September 15th, 1969. You know, one thing Keith said to me tonight when he asked me to do this, he said, I said to him, I said, hell, I don't know what to say, Keith. And he said, well, we'll just sandwich you in between Marion and Chuck, and nobody will care what you say anyway. You know, one thing I haven't heard on this cruise, and I've heard a lot of things, and I've heard a lot of gratitude and everything, but I thought I would mention to you how much money this cruise probably cost me. And I don't know whether any of you have thought of this, but if this is your first cruise like it is mine, this is a goddamn expensive cruise. And because it cost, like Marion said, it cost a lot, both mentally, physically, and financially to get here. But just briefly, I'd like to reminisce for a minute about how I got here. And that is the fact that at 34 years old and after 20 years of drinking and a very exciting life, I came here with all of the credentials that you look for. I had just been convicted of my first 502, or excuse me, third 502. I was being divorced by the same wife for the second time, and I was $8,000 to $10,000 in debt. And after this man, the first man that I talked to, that brought me to my first meeting, heard that, he decided that I qualified. But prior to that, and this is one of the most important things I think in my sobriety, I had a day, like everybody has, where I just couldn't drink anymore. I couldn't live anymore. I couldn't face what was going on anymore. And I went and talked to a man that had worked for me for 15 years. And he had never talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. All he ever talked about was his program. And that he had a living program that taught him how to live one day at a time. And I knew he didn't drink because he always covered for me while I was drinking, like most everybody else around me. But I went and talked to Homer, and he'd been sober about 17 years at the time. And I couldn't stop crying. I had this little problem. And I was not a crier because I grew up rather fast. I started working when I was about 8 years old, and I never had much time for crying. But I went to Homer this day because I could not stop crying. And he spent an hour and a half telling me his whole story. It's the damnedest story I ever heard. And then I spent about an hour telling him my problems. And when I got all through, somewhere along the line, I had quit crying. And when I got all through, he leaned back in his chair and he said, "Hell, Frank." He said, "When you called me, I thought something was really wrong with you." He said, "There's nothing wrong with you. You're just an alcoholic." He says, "I've known that for the last 8 years, but I didn't want to bother you with it." So he said, he took me out in the kitchen and he said to me, "I would like you to have your last drink with me." And he reached up in the cupboard and he grabbed a quart bottle of ant poison. And he handed it to me. And he said, "Here, drink this." And I said, "Hell, Homer, I'll die if I drink that." And he says, "Don't ever forget it." He says, "That's no different than alcohol for you, because you're sick." And then he suggested that I find this guy that turned out to be Warren and go to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I met Warren, and Warren took me to the Laguna Beach meeting, and he told me on the way in that all newcomers sat in the front seat, or front row. And he sat me in the front row next to Chuck, and I thought to myself, Jesus, it's too bad this guy didn't make it earlier. I was 34 years old, and I thought I was awful young, and I really didn't know whether I was an alcoholic, but I knew I sure as hell had living problems. And so anyway, when they asked for newcomers, I was the only one that stood up. And ever since, for the last 10 years, the people in Laguna Beach have been picking me up when I needed to be picked up. And it was a funny thing. There was 150, 200 people there that night, and Warren introduced me to about probably 100 of them because I didn't know what I had latched onto, but I had latched onto a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and knew everybody. He was an ex-delegate. He was an ex-convention chairman. He was an ex-everything. And he also lived across the street from Chuck. And so he introduced me to all these people, and when I went home, my wife said to me, "Well, what do you think?" And I said, I only remember three guys. I only remember three names. One of the guys was Warren, and two of the guys was Frank. Their name was Frank, and I could remember that. And that's exactly what I got out of my first meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And the next night, this one of the Franks called me, and he said, "Hey, I can't take you to a meeting tonight because I'm going to the Orange County Jail, and you just got out of there 2 weeks ago." So he said, "I'm going to send another guy." And another guy showed up, a guy that I had drank with for years.